We are continuing a short study of some of the chapters of Ecclesiastes. We have seen a number of times in the short study, vanity, meaningless, chasing after the wind. Without God, Solomon came to those conclusions, and we would concur with that. Chapters 11 and 12 actually are together in their looking forward and in their encouragement. And the segue between the end of chapter 11 and chapter 12 that we will plan to look at next Sunday definitely fit perfectly together. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Two ideas are alluded to here in practicality, and then, of course, there's a message behind his using that statement. First of all, there's the illusion of putting something out with a future gain. In this case, the word seed is used, but it relates to the habit that people of that time had when they would plant seed, and in some cases, because of the boating system, they would plant the seed and it would go in the water and then it would be distributed in other places. And so it's planting the seed so that in the future there's something to be gained. And you don't always know what's to be gained. And the overall lesson is, as we would apply it to today's circumstances, we need to invest in faith. We don't do things knowing there's a definite result. I taught this material at Pleasant View last Sunday night. I decided to, I've been there each of the Sunday nights in May, and I shared with them, and they're going to have home mission coming to their congregation next month. But I shared with them and share with you now that there are times where you don't have the reality of a consequence. You don't know what will come from it, but we must sow seed. Sowing seed is what we're told to do. Some plant, some water, God gives the increase. And I related to them what we're doing again, home, house-to-house, heart-to-heart. 1,020 houses will get a brochure, we think, this week. I received our short mailing, and I'll pass them out when I know that they're delivered in our community. We receive first-class mail. They're sending it by the cheapest possible bulk mail when they're sent out, so the timing is slower. But we don't know the result. But I can tell you, when you see what's going into those homes, it's a dynamic presentation of the Lord's church. And it's presented in a very factual, loving way. Very colorful, well-written, well-presented, if you will. And it's the thing we would want is for people to understand something about who we are, something about us. And if they're looking, it will provide answers. If they're not, every time I've been somewhere that used house to house, we would get fairly quickly a note that my email is on it, the church's phone number is on it, and there's usually at least one person that says, please don't send that to me anymore. I don't want it. And I say, thank you very much. We will take your name off the list. I hang up and I say, thank you, Lord. We got a response. Someone saw it. Someone saw it. Now, their response is somewhat typical. And they did not want to receive it again. But we got a response. And cast your bread upon the water, for after many days you will find it again. And, of course, in the culture of putting seed on the Nile that would be taken to other places along the edge of the Nile and a product would come forth from that seed, they would have understood it. And they would have known, oh yes, we do that all the time. We've done that often. Sow the seed. It will not return to you void, the scripture tells us. But an application, it's the phrase that some people would say, what's the use? Is it better to do nothing? Or is it better to do something even though you don't get much of a response? To me, I just described what I think the answer is. Chuck Swindoll, he taught this. I heard him many years ago now. But he said his application of this verse is that you go for it. You're bullish about life. Since life is full of pitfalls, you'll have to work at it to find any meaning and satisfaction, so we better get on with the task. And I love that attitude, and I like that rendering as far as that application of that very simple verse. Cast your bread upon the water. Sow seed, and it will not return to you void. There will be a response. Tommy?
I don't really ever believe that God intended for us to live a static life.
Yeah.
He intended for us to constantly be growing and reaching and pushing as far as we can to our potential, and a lot of that involves sowing seeds. We're going to be given a lot of opportunities soon with the home mission projects coming up to do that very thing in a little bit more of a aggressive way than the house to house, but I applaud that.
Sure,
well.
Sure.
So hold on to your seats. It might get a little bumpy, but we're going to sow some pretty good seeds around here.
Yeah, we are faithful to the Lord's church, to the scriptures. We are a New Testament church, and we're not ashamed of it, and we look forward to opportunities to share with people what that means. It's chapter and verse. It's doing things the way we believe the first century church did it. We want to be converted like they were in the book of Acts, and we want to worship the way they were told in the epistles, and we want to organize the way they organized in the epistles of the New Testament. That's who we are. We're not ashamed of it. We're very pleased that we're headed down that road. We think it's a good road to be on. But in this case, live life with the future out there. Let it be by faith. Invest in faith. And don't be held back. Don't be afraid. Don't be overly concerned with quick results. I don't think I've shared this here, but my dad taught for a number of years at a small church outside of Chattanooga until I was in, I think, the fifth grade, and he was always my favorite teacher, even when he was an elder, not preaching as often. But he got a phone call one Sunday, someone he had taught about 15 years earlier, and he wanted him to come out and go to the creek on his property and immerse him in water. And Daddy remembered studying with him, disappointed that he did make a decision at that time, but it bore fruit. It bore fruit. And he wanted to be saved like they're saved in the book of Acts. And I've always remembered that. You don't know when it will happen. Comments other than what we've said. Verse 2, give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. He's encouraging by his statement to be generous. He's saying you be willing to give when you have, to seven, maybe even eight. And so he's not limiting, if you will, a meager generosity, but be generous with what you have. And in that generosity, just acknowledge that you might be there one day. You might be there one day and needing someone to be generous toward you. Jesus told a parable, and he told a parable of the dishonest servant. And it's never presented anything different than that. What he did was dishonest, but he was shrewd. He's listed as a shrewd servant. He knew he was about to be fired. He called people in, being the steward of someone else's property, and he made arrangements for them to pay less than they owed so he would have some benefit when he was without work. People would remember him as lessening their debt, and it would work to his benefit. He's called a dishonest steward, but he's called shrewd. He's shrewd. And Jesus told that parable on purpose, if you will. And it tells us in the church, we need to use the same business sense that the world uses. We don't need to hesitate to take advantage of things that are offered to us. And it's not something dishonest. It's using good business sense. And I had someone describe that for me when I said that a number of years ago. He made the comment that he knew of a congregation that had thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars sitting in a checking account. And people at the congregation tried to encourage them to at least put it in an interest-bearing account. It's just good business sense. And they refused to, as if it just wasn't something they were comfortable with, something they didn't want to do for some other reason. But he used the example to suggest that we need to use good business sense. And in the parable of the dishonest steward, but comparing it here, and be very generous. Be very generous when you have the ability. And I know most congregations do not say no, and they're hoping and willing to present to those in need food. Other things are difficult, but food is the thing we need first and foremost. And to help them with food should be a first opportunity for us. John, did you have a comment? Yeah. Yeah. But it's a valid point of view. It's a valid point of view. You don't know the future. You're generous in giving to seven or eight. The number would imply that as far as the application that some will make. But you don't know the future. You don't know the future. And you might be in a similar situation. You don't know what might come back as far as your need in relation to what you have or haven't chosen to do. Stan? Good idea. What did Jesus encourage in the Jewish culture? What did they do when they harvested? They left some behind in the corners, if you will. They didn't try to get 100% out of the ground. They left some for those who would come and need it. They were conscious of the benevolent act, if you will. Verse 3, Ecclesiastes 11. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there will it lie. That was harder to understand. I think the first part is simpler when we know that Jesus told us that God provides rain for the sinner and the saint. All of people are blessed when rain falls. And from God's design, sinner or saint, doesn't matter. There are some blessings, sun, rain, others. And so it's alluding certainly to acts of faith and the provision that we receive and the necessity of receiving those things. It's shocking for us having received so much rain here, and so many places now are full that have not been full of water for years. I don't know the significance of it, but the presentation told me this must be pretty significant. Lake Shasta is full, the headline said with an exclamation point. And Tulare Lake hasn't been there for decades, I think, and suddenly it's creating floods around it because it's there again. And we appreciate and understand what it's been like, and we're thankful for God to send the rain, if you will. But he's suggesting that sometimes there will be acts, problems, a tree falling, what does it say? A tree falls to the south, it falls to the north, and wherever it falls, it's going to be there. It's idiom that's suggesting that sometimes life works the opposite way. And sometimes when things happen, it can't be undone. And sometimes the effects are very specific. Now, it's not alluding to that with specificity, but it's suggesting that in the same place that rain may fall, there also will be trees that fall. And where they fall and how they fall is described for us. But the bottom line is, there they will lie. And sometimes problems will come. And there they are. And how are you going to deal with them? Now look at the progression. Live by faith. Be generous. But know there's problems in this world. They fit. The verses fit together when you seek to understand or apply them. And problems will come, and wherever they are, whatever they might be, it's an opportunity for us to acknowledge it and to be prepared to do something about it. To undo it, the suggestion here is they fall and they just will be there. It can't be changed. But it also is suggesting that sometimes you can't stop problems from occurring. They will be there, if you will. So we live by faith. We're generous as we have opportunities. We may be there one day. And sometimes the tree just falls. The tree just falls. And what's our response? I have a feeling we're going to deal with it in coming verses. But what's the response? Did we think as Christians we would have no problems in this world? Did we think, as we saw last week, the myth of wealth will bring satisfaction? Did we believe it would solve all of our problems from Ecclesiastes 5? We know that there are teachings that tell us, no, that's not the case. In fact, sometimes, as we commented with our Rockefeller, he just wanted a little bit more. One of the richest men for his time. Just a little bit more. So sometimes problems come. And when they come, what we do about them, if you will. But we act in faith. We have those problems and we deal with them. Now, think of the life of Paul. Think of 1 Corinthians 12, the long list of things that were done to him physically because he was advocating Jesus as the resurrected Son of God. Beaten a number of times with the number of legal stripes plus one, left to die, cast into the sea. do you think he would suggest that we stop when hardships come? We no longer are in an expectation of being bold with our faith? Not at all. He gives them in a list for us to encourage us to still be faithful, to still be strong. So we act in faith. Solomon does say, whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. I have had dreams about my grandfather lately because some of the things we've studied have brought his personality and character to mind. A farmer, if he's waiting for the perfect conditions, will not plant. He won't plant. If you're looking for the perfect conditions, the wind, the clouds, you're not going to plant. But if you do what you should do and let the seed die, Jesus told us that first, the seed has to first die before it comes forth, and he likened it unto himself. But if you plant the seed and allow it to die, do the things you can do, then there's a great opportunity for a product, a produce. But if you're trying to analyze it and get wait for all the circumstances to be in a row, you'll not plant. You'll not take the chance, if you will. You'll not waste your time, if you will. Granddaddy was one of these that he plowed and he planted and he prayed and he would water some of the things that were close to a well. He had long garden hoses that he knew other places he would need to help along the way coming out of the well on his property. But the bottom line, it had to eventually happen as a result of the conditions of the wind and the rain and the water and the sun. He never would have not planted. And that's the inference. What would keep you from being willing to plant, to move forward? Perfect conditions? You'd never plant. You'd never, ever plant. And again, that's the metaphor of life, your expectations, your plans. If you're not a farmer, that's still applies. Tommy?
So I think that this can also apply to the church, because say that you have a church that's thinking about doing a particular program. They think, well, we'll hold off doing that until the conditions are just right. So we think it's just the right time to do this. And a couple of years later, you still haven't done it.
Because we don't know the conditions.
Right.
Yeah.
There's never something you have to start.
Yeah. It would be great if we had guarantees. It would make leadership and decisions much, much different. They really wouldn't be decisions, would they? Let's just acknowledge that. But we act on faith. We do what we need to do, and we give God the increase, and he gets the glory. If it was dependent upon right circumstances for us to see the right conditions and for us to act upon those right conditions, that's the definition of humanism. That's the personification of I'm doing it my way and I get the credit. And that will never be the case in spiritual matters. It just won't. Theorists? Yeah. Yeah. C.S. Lewis writes in his Screwtape Letters of Wormwood receiving this encouragement as far as he was tempting people, in this regard Christians. He said in his writing, encourage them to find reasons to criticize. Encourage the people to see perfection is not there. And let them be uneasy. And let them criticize. Now, C.S. Lewis wrote in the same vein, Satan loves a critic. He loves a critic. And in my presentations, the few times that that comes up, it fits here. We shouldn't have done that. Have we wasted money? It's sent to the wrong place. All the things that could come up. Satan loves it. Do you realize all the things he could allow someone sitting here this morning to criticize if they were of a mind to criticize? What about the color of the carpet, of the pews here? Could that have been a different color when the building was built? Was the slant of the auditorium something that could have been criticized? Does it need to be slanted at all? Do we need all of these bulbs right now? Using electricity when it's so expensive? What about turning the temperature up or down 2 or 3 degrees to save a little bit of money? There's always something to criticize of a physical nature, and it affects people spiritually. It affects people spiritually. And I hold my breath and says, you know, I don't mean to be judgmental, or I don't want to criticize, but, and you hold your breath because they're about to do that. Satan wants us to find something to critique. God wants us to roll up our sleeves and get to work. God needs us to get to work. And don't find criticism that justifies in your thinking you not getting to work. Well, I don't agree with this, so I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to be prayerful about this. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. And certainly the conditions, we leave it and give it to God. Everything we do, we give it to God. The next verse. Verse 5, as you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. We're going to wait until we have all the perfect conditions. We're going to watch the wind. We're going to watch the rain. We're going to choose the right time and not act until, well, just look at life. You don't know the path of the wind. John 6 uses the word wind in a similar wordage with the Holy Spirit. We can't see the Spirit just like we can't see the wind, but we see the results or the acts of the wind acting, and that's the way it is with the Spirit. I think it's John 3. I think I used the wrong chapter. But wind and spirit are used together. And he's saying you don't know. You just don't know. But even more profound, you don't know how the body is formed in a mother's womb. Now, we know one thing. It's from God. He's the maker, and he says that as he finishes the statement. But we don't know that. We can't figure it out. We don't have that understanding. We didn't set it in place. And I guess he would say if he were standing here today, and why do we think we can understand it? And we've admitted on Wednesday night a number of times, if we're uncomfortable having all the information, we're going to always be uncomfortable. God's not going to reveal every single thing. Faith We let him be God. We saw Wednesday night in another context. We let God be God. And he is the one who sets the body to be formed in the mother's womb. And in that regard, we cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things, the one that sends the rain, the one that sends the sunshine, the one that provides, if you will, a drought or not, and doesn't cause nature to be changed, to provide things that we really need. The wheat crop in America right now is terrible. We're going to pay a whole lot more for wheat bread in coming weeks. The wheat crop is terrible in the Middle Plains. Not long ago, they were, because they couldn't afford hay, they were having to sell and even slaughter beef because they couldn't feed them. And we would have gladly given them some of our rain, wouldn't we? When we had so much, but it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So the critic waiting for the perfect circumstance, why are we doing that again? Well, we're sowing seed, and we're letting God work into the hearts of human minds and hearts. We're letting God work, and we're praying that he will help us find those who are looking for God and be open to learn about God through the New Testament, his church, of what it means to be a New Testament church. So verse 4 just yells at us. Verse 5 certainly applies a deeper reference or understanding to it. Observations? Anybody want to say amen? Anybody want to raise your hand and say, I'm going to quit being a critic? I'm going to roll up my sleeves and get to work. Why do we do that? When I went into ministry, my dad told me that Sundays are going to come around very quickly. Wednesdays do too. But he says, you'll do fine. But just realize they come around very quickly. But he also encouraged me to realize that you can only do what you can do. You have to depend on others. And God has always used people to accomplish his will. But don't allow people to discourage you to the point that you are uncertain about what you've chosen to do. I almost quit the ministry 3 times when we lived in Oklahoma, because of 2 elders there, and I finally chose to leave. I almost quit 3 times because of who they were and what they did and the way they conducted themselves. One was passive, the other was a bully. And I almost left ministry. I'm thankful I didn't. I decided to leave them. And I'm thankful that I didn't. People sometimes don't say and do things that are encouragement at all. And it's difficult. It's disappointing. I found that I wasn't discouraged. I was more disappointed because they knew better. They were old enough to have known better. Anyway, enough said. It's recorded. Maybe that's a good time that we should have stopped and paused it. But anyway, verse 6, sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let not your hands be idle. For you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. It's interesting. He acknowledges that we just don't know. We knew that already. And he acknowledges that you need to do the normal, sowing seed in the morning, but there's work to do during the day, even in the evening, is the implication. And you don't know if what you're doing early or middle or late in the day is what will be the most important. You don't know which of those timetables will provide the circumstances that will bring success. In our myths of wealth last week, we saw that the person who has much, who is full, is not able to rest at night. He's concerned about making more or who might get what he has. Wealth doesn't provide that sense of peace, if you will. Ecclesiastes 5, I think around verse 17 tells us, but we looked at that. We don't know. But what do we know? If we don't sow the seed in the morning and there's no work as a result of that during the day and at evening, what's going to be the result? You'll get to not go outside. You can watch TV. You can travel. You can do whatever you want to because you haven't done the basic thing. But sowing the seed isn't the only thing. There's other things to be done, and yet you don't know which of the things you do, early, middle, or late in the day, which of that will bring the success that you would like. Each of them may be equal in bringing what you would like, but you don't know. And so you need to act accordingly. Terry? Yeah, and Terry knows, and you do too, if you've read this chapter at all, it segues from the young to the old very quickly and very specifically in verse 9. So that is coming, that application is certainly coming, and this may be a segue to some of that. I have in my Bible the subtitle, if you will, Remember Your Creator While Young. And it's over the beginning of the verses found in chapter verse 7. Light is sweet and it pleases the eye to see the sun. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. Solomon has been so realistic to people and places without God throughout the book. Vanity, meaningless, chasing after the sun. Without God, that's what it is. But God gives us the gift of enjoyment. We saw in chapter 5 in those latter verses last week. So he wants us to enjoy life, but he gives us that ability. And he gives us that permission. Some people need to know that. When we studied the miracles of Jesus in September, as we spent time with Jesus ending the year, it was important to realize that Jesus lived life. He went to weddings. He might have smiled occasionally. He might have enjoyed the music and the things provided in a celebration scene. Now, some people can't understand that. They don't want to think about that. And when the chosen came out, some of the criticism that was offered is it presented a personality of Jesus that was casual. And he joked with his disciples in the chosen. He laughed about things in life. I loved it because I don't think he was a stoic robot who couldn't look at people and understand what was going on around him and respond as a human to the things around him. But it's difficult for some people to see it that way. I think you need to loosen up and understand Jesus was a human. When he hit his thumb with whatever he used in the carpenter shop, it bruised and he bled. And he may have yelled out, not a curse word, but it may have hurt. It may have hurt. And we need to allow him to be that. But we can enjoy life. We can enjoy life.
He couldn't call the little children to him and not smile.
Children would have been repulsed by him. They would have wanted, that's just the fact of human nature. Some people take Isaiah 53, we'll refer to it only briefly in the sermon this morning, but when we see the suffering of Christ and it's given to us by the prophets, they suggest that there was nothing about him that would draw men to him. And they take that to mean that he was an ugly man and people would have been repulsed to look at him. I don't think that's what it's saying at all. Being with children would refute that thinking. But God did not place upon the humanity of Jesus some charisma that people were attracted to that was outside of their choice or their control. He wasn't just the handsomest guy in the whole world and people just flocked to him because he was handsome. That's not what it's suggesting. That's not what we would want. And that's what it's suggesting to us. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes 11. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. But let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless, or vanity, or vexation of spirit. I just realized another word in the older translations. There's hardships in this world, and we can see life and we can enjoy it, but there will be times where it's less enjoyment. It's more difficult. Days of darkness. 3 minutes, I want to make a statement from Matthew 6. I have always appreciated early in his ministry Jesus telling us that we don't need to worry. We worry about things we have no control over. They usually don't happen, and they steal the joy that we could have today because we're worrying about something tomorrow. And then he says, and we're acting like the pagan, the Gentile, who has no God. So worry is a sign that we don't trust God. We don't act as if we have a God. But then he says, each day has enough trouble of its own. Now, does that help you to understand that God understands our life? Each day has enough trouble of its own. And I'm glad he acknowledges that. Just like last week, Psalm 105, the sermon that most people couldn't hear. By the way, Gary Starr and Brian got together and the sound system is back the way we want it to be. I told Brian when we moved here after about 3 months, I haven't said this publicly, but I've said it to him privately. I've looked for Brian for 42 and a half years. To be at a congregation where someone not only knows what to do, but they're willing to do it. I waited a year and a half in one particular city for someone who had the ability to come and just network my desktop with the church desktop so we could both work on the bulletin from our workstation, if you will. He had the ability, just didn't make the time. I've waited for Brian for 42 and a half years, and he has proven capable, and Gary with the expertise to come alongside, and we hopefully can hear and see the way we want to today. I made my point, then I got chasing a rabbit. Brian, you were a rabbit today. Thank you. We will look at chapter 12, Lord willing, next week. You will enjoy this chapter. If you haven't read it, if you haven't studied it, you will be very surprised at what's there. We know the ending, but the chapter is pretty amazing. It's also very realistic.